You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
Okay, I think that's enough time for everyone to get situated. I may as well just start talking. So, howdy everybody. This is the Podcasting 101 session. Pretty much just the basics of how to get started, how to get up and running. The last time I gave this presentation was at PodcasterCon about a year ago with my friend Rob Walsh, Podcast 411. We spent 2 hours on it at that point, taking questions the whole time through, and we ran out of time. I was told we have 45 minutes this time. And so obviously the logical thing for me to do was to make my presentation 20 minutes. And then we're going to leave the rest of the time for questions. So hopefully that works for everybody. Unfortunately, it is a lot of material to cover, and there really is no way that you can cover podcasting in 20 minutes, 45 minutes, less than a day, really, if you want to give it really complete coverage. So what I'm going to do is pretty much present a very high-level basic overview, and I'm not going to go into all the possible options. You know, McIntyre's Law, under the right circumstances, anything I tell you could be wrong. So do not take anything in this presentation as gospel. Certainly do not take any of this as the only way to do things. What I'm presenting here is some quick and easy ways to do things that have worked for a lot of people. And obviously, you know, if your needs are different from what I'm talking about, then you can find your own ways. And I'm going to talk at the end about some other resources, some books and some online resources that you can get more information from at the end of this. So, who the hell am I to be telling you about podcasting? My name is Steve Ely. I've been podcasting since May of 2005, which I think in podcast years makes me about 180 or something like that. My main podcast is called Escape Pod, and it's a science fiction podcast. We narrate short stories. We actually buy audio rights from top authors, do audio. Sometimes I read the story, sometimes we have a pool of volunteers, and then we give them away for free. And then I take donations from my listeners to kind of balance the books on that. I've got plenty of bookmarks on the swag table in the back, so they're high in fiber, so please come and get some. I recently, middle of last year, launched a second podcast, a spinoff called Pseudopod, which is a horror podcast. Same model, and we also have pretty bookmarks for that. You know, same thing, we buy horror stories, narrate them, and give them away. And then just a few months ago, I started a podcast called Podholes with my friend Mike Menengay, which is a podcasting Q&A sort of thing. Yeah, both of us are just huge smartasses that love to argue with each other. So we're doing kind of a car talk for podcasting sort of thing. Take a lot of questions from the audience. So, wasn't going to spend too much time on this. If you're here at all, then you've obviously heard the word podcast at some point. Or you heard there was free coffee. Not sure which. But does anyone here not have any idea what a podcast is? Good. Okay. As close to an official definition as anyone has, which means it's the one in Wikipedia, is that a podcast is any series of media files. It can be audio files, it can be video files, it can be PDFs, whatever, that you put up over the internet and you have a feed, a syndication feed that people can subscribe to. That way, when you put up a new episode, if they're subscribed with the right software, then they get that next episode automatically. It just comes right down to their computer or onto their portable device, and you know, they don't have to do anything with it. They don't have to do anything to get it, I should say. Hopefully they're doing things with it. We did say in the notes that we do listening to podcasts briefly. I'm not going to dwell on this very much. Basically, the fastest answers, if you have an iPod, iTunes is by far the top podcast directory that's out there right now. My own listeners, about 70% of them are actually listening through iTunes and downloading it onto their iPods or burning CDs off of iTunes to listen to it in their car or whatever they do. What they do with it once they've got it, I have no idea. If you do not have an iPod and you have another MP3 player, the easiest and best client I found for just getting things set up and not having to think about it again is called Podcast Ready. That's podcastready.com. I have done some contracting work for them, in the interest of full disclosure, but I actually do believe in the product as well. It's really easy. It's a tiny little Java client that actually can live on your MP3 player. If your MP3 player can like store files, you know, works, mounts as a hard drive on your computer, you just drag it onto there, you double click it, and whatever podcast you're subscribed to on the website, it just brings them straight down onto your MP3 player. So you plug it in, you double click the thing, it loads your podcast, and then you go. So I have not found one that's easier than that. In terms of what podcast you should be listening to, well, I cannot advise you on that. That's up to you. There are tens of thousands of them out there right now on every conceivable subject. Most of you are not here to talk about how to listen to podcasts. You're here because you're interested in making your own podcasts. Out of the folks in the room, how many of you already have your own podcast? Okay. Very cool. And the rest of you, are you interested in making your podcast? Good. Yay. The four P's that I came up with here, you got to plan your podcast, then you produce the audio files, then you publish them up on the web where people can get to them, and then you promote them to let people know what's out there. Those are the things that we're going to cover very briefly. In detail, there are far more steps than this, and not all of them begin with the letter P. Planning your podcast. Many people consider this an optional step. I do not. You have to be thinking ahead of time. Why are you doing this? And believe me, there are a lot of podcasts. If you listen to them, you can kind of tell no one actually asked themselves this before they started. There are business reasons, there are personal reasons. Maybe you just want to talk about your dog. Maybe you have a political message you want to get out to people. That's entirely up to you. Again, I cannot give you your answer for this. Many people podcast for themselves, primarily. You know, they're doing it for personal satisfaction and fulfillment. You know, the same reason people keep, you know, blogs and live journals and things like that is because they like to talk about themselves. They want to keep their friends and family updated. Other people are looking to get a message out, and they are trying to reach a certain audience, and they're trying to, they're trying to bring people in. They have something they want to say to people. My assumption with a lot of this is that, you know, more than half of your reason is going to be because you want to build an audience. If you want to do it for yourself, that motive cannot be impugned. However, it also means that no one needs to tell you how to do it. You can do, you know, any way you want to do it. There's no structure that you need. There's no marketing message you need to get out. And you don't have to do a whole lot to promote it if just having your own audio files out there is your own satisfaction. If you want to get a message out to people, then that's a little bit more work. And you also have to keep your audience in mind more. You have to be thinking, okay, who do I want to listen to this message? Like in my podcast, science fiction fans. And I also want to bring more people in who say they don't have time to read science fiction, but everybody has a commute these days. Everybody, you know, is in their car and has times when their eyes are busy and their hands are busy, but their ears aren't, and their brains are maybe half engaged. So, you know, that's who I picked for my audience. I want to get more people who say they don't have time to read. I want to start getting them passionate about stories again. So that's what I picked, and that's really guided a lot of the decisions I've made with my podcast. Question three, what is it that you want to tell them? What message do you want to get out there? And again, I can't tell you what your answers need to be, but you do have to be thinking about it because that will guide your show structure. A lot of these are my personal opinions on this stuff. And once again, you know, this isn't always true. I do believe, and I've heard this from a lot of podcast listeners, unless you have a reason to go long, for instance, yeah, my podcast is the length of whatever story I bought and I'm running that week, so it could be anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour. But if you just, if you don't have a reason to make it long, shorter podcasts tend to work better. They tend to build larger audiences. Some of the most successful podcasts out there, Onion Radio News, it's a news satire thing. It's 1 minute long. It's a daily 1 minute long podcast, and it's always in the top 20 on iTunes. Yeah, Grammar Girl, she does grammar tips. It's 5 minutes. A lot of the 1 to 5 minute shows tend to be really successful. My own podcast list on my iPod is listed by duration. I have it sorted by duration, so I always hear the shortest podcasts first. That way, when I'm driving, I know I'll get the most podcast files in whatever time that I have. Okay. Define long. What do you think is long? the thing is, if I had to pick an average, I'd say the average podcast episodes of the ones I'm familiar with are probably about 20 minutes long. That's about an average, and it's a pretty good gauge for people's attention span. If you're going to go longer than 20 minutes, you'd better be really fascinating. If you go less than 20 minutes, it still helps to be fascinating. It really does. But again, a lot of this will be guided by your material. Two voices tend to have a lot more energy. Some of the most successful, most fun podcasts that are out there are couple casts. One of the earliest and still one of the most successful podcasts is the Dawn and Drew Show. It's just two married folks out in the Midwest who, both with very dirty minds, who just flirt with each other and they flirt with their audience and they just tell dirty jokes the whole time through. It's got high five-digit audience size, maybe six digits at this point. I'm not sure. Especially if you have just a general subject that you want to cover and you don't want to pre-script your show, you just want to turn on a microphone and start talking, a lot of times you'll get a lot more energy out of it. There's a more sense of spontaneity if you have two people willing to work with it, like with Podholes. That's why it's two of us doing it, because we can argue with each other. Arguing with myself would sound a little odd to people, even though I actually do that. If you do go long, it helps to have segments to your show. It helps to actually have some kind of a structure, an introductory bit, have different news stories, for instance, if you're doing some kind of a technology news podcast or some other subject news thing. Find a consistent structure that you want to do with it and stick to that structure more or less. I mean, that's not saying it should be static throughout the entire life of your podcast. Change things and try to pay attention to what your audience says when they give you feedback. And do what you need to do. But just someone turning on a microphone and talking for half an hour straight, it's really easy to zone out on that. If you break it up into 5-minute pieces with some variety to it and some bumper music in between, it's a lot easier to keep people engaged. This last one, this is one of my little pet peeves. So many podcasts start with, "I'm sorry that I didn't get a podcast out last week. My dog was..." "My dog thought he was a cat, and I had to take him to therapy, they start going on for 15 minutes about their day and stuff. Unless your podcast is actually about your day, which, there are many personal journal podcasts, and that's cool, but if it's not, then, if you want to, it's okay with a podcast. It is a very personal medium, and it's okay to talk about yourself, but at the very beginning of your podcast, give the audience what they came for. If it's technology news, start talking about that stuff first. And anything you want to say about yourself, put it in the middle or put it towards the end, after people are already engaged, after they're already satisfied with what you're giving them. It's okay to talk about yourself, but don't bore them in the first few minutes of your podcast. And don't, make sure you're aware of what people are coming to you for and make sure they get that early. And this, to me, is the golden rule, and a lot of people do seem to forget this. No one is making you podcast. Well, maybe if you're, if you're doing it for your job or something. But if you do, let me know who you work for. But the thing is, make the podcast that you yourself want to listen to. Make the one that you wish was out there in the world, because that will give your personal energy into it. That is what's going to make other people passionate to listen to you if you have your own passion in it. One of my favorite podcasts, my friend Merle Lafferty has a podcast called I Should Be Writing. She is not a professional writer herself. She has a few fiction credits, a few short story sales and things, and she wants to be more successful than that. And she did not find a lot of good writing podcasts out there. And so she decided, okay, well, I'm not that experienced, and I'm not sure anyone wants to listen to what I have to say about it, but what the hell, I'll give it a try. And what she does, she interviews successful authors, and she gives the advice as she's learned it, and she talks to people who are far more experienced to make sure that the advice that she's giving is right, and to find out their perspective on it. So she's learning from talking to these people. And right now, it's the most successful writing podcast out there. Beginning writers really love it because she's coming from their level. She's talking to them. She's part of their peer group, and so she's able to connect with what beginning writers want to hear a lot more easily than someone who's been on the bestseller list for 15 years. All right, now let's get into the crunchy bits. Obviously, I'm talking primarily here about audio podcasts. By the way, if you want to make a video podcast, most of the publication side of things is the same, but the production side gets a lot more complicated. And I'm not a video podcast producer myself at this point, so I don't have a lot to say about it. A lot of people make the mistake when they decide they want to get into podcasting of thinking, okay, I need to get this $600 mixer and I need to buy these $400 microphones. And yeah, they spend a ridiculous amount of money on sound hardware. The problem with that, like any other hobby, how many of you have picked up a hobby thinking that you were going to spend the rest of your life on it, and then 2 months later you're not doing it anymore? Yeah, exactly. And you know, if you drop $500 on your hobby in the meanwhile, you kind of feel like a schmuck. So my feeling is start with the minimum level of hardware you need to get an acceptable sound quality, to get what you need in order to get a sound that other people can stand listening to. And don't spend more than that when you start. You're always going to have the itch. If you do this more than a few months, you're going to want to upgrade anyway. And you're going to start making Christmas lists and putting microphones on, you know, telling everybody that's what you want. So give yourself an upgrade path. Because you're going to need it at that point, even if you already spent $500. 6 months from now, you're going to want to spend $1,000. So don't spend too much money to start with. I do think that there is a minimum acceptable level of sound quality. Yeah, when you listen to the radio, if your favorite radio show sounded like it was coming from a CB radio, then that would not, yeah, that would distract you. And so I think there's a minimum level of sound quality you need. If your laptop has a built-in microphone on the top of the screen, that's probably not good enough. The little $5 LabTech microphone that you can buy at Best Buy in the clearance aisle, that's probably not good enough. And, you know, like phoning, you know, there are several services that let you, podcast by phone. There are a lot of disadvantages to that. It sounds like you're phoning in your podcast. They don't call for good editing capabilities, et cetera. I think that at the very least, you need to have a good clear sound, and your voice needs to go above the level of background noise. Fortunately, it doesn't cost too much money to get to that minimum sound level. A lot of people get started, and some people stay throughout their podcasting careers, with something like Logitech makes a USB headset microphone. It's okay headphones, and it's a pretty good microphone, a little noise-canceling microphone. Yeah, right here. Like $35, $40 is what those things cost. USB sound devices are good because it doesn't matter then how lousy your sound card is. Most laptops have really, really terrible sound hardware built in. And even if you have like a nice Sound Blaster sound card, they're really designed for outputting really good game sound. They're not designed to, for high quality recording. You get a lot of electrical noise with those. So I'm a fan of USB sound devices. Those headsets sound fine. An advantage of a headset is that you don't have to worry so much about microphone technique, how far away the microphone is from your mouth, because it's always the same distance. And even if you're walking around the room, the microphone is right there where you need it to be. Mm-hmm. Oh no, it's a wire protocol. It's actually a connection type. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like I said, the Logitech. There's like a Logitech 250 headset or a 350. Those are pretty good. If you want to have somewhat better sound than that, and if you're much more comfortable with a microphone on the desk in front of you, there are several companies that make good USB microphones. Samson makes a very popular one. It's like the C01 USB, I think is the brand model. But if you go to Guitar Center, or if you go to any place that sells sound equipment, then just type in USB microphone in the search box, and you'll find this stuff. A company called Blue makes a Blue Snowball mic, which is like a $150 USB mic. And these are very often studio quality microphones. It's just you don't need to plug them into a mixer or anything. They plug directly into your computer. Disadvantage of that, there's no upgrade path. It only plugs into your computer, so there's nothing else that you can do with it, if you decide to get a better microphone later on. And then the kind of semi-professional path is to actually get yourself a sound mixer and get yourself some real studio microphones, microphones with connections like this that have little three-prong things going into them. That if you actually do have a couple cast, or if you have a couple people in the same room talking, I recommend getting yourself a mixer, because then you can set the levels of each microphone independently from each other. It's inevitable. Some people are going to talk quieter than other people, and in order to get a fairly even volume level between those two folks, you need to be able to set those levels independently. Mixers are really good for that. And also, you can get superior sound quality out of those, because the better microphones really need something like a mixer to bring the level up, to give them the power they need. And it's not necessarily expensive. You can get mixers for $50 at this point with just a couple of microphone inputs. You can get studio microphones for $50. MXL, the MXL 990 is a really good studio microphone. It's very popular among podcasters because it sounds like a $300 microphone, but it costs $50. Once you have your hardware, you need something to plug it into. Just about everybody, there are plenty of ways to record your sound, but most people these days record direct to their computers just because that's where you're going to be editing and getting things out. So, yeah, skip a few steps. Luckily, sound software has been getting cheaper and cheaper over the course of time, and the two ones I recommend here are both free. Audacity is an open source sound editor, and which means it's free, and it runs on every platform. It runs on Windows, it runs on Mac, and it runs on Linux. It's not the perfect end-all and be-all of audio editors. Some people, it's not 100% stable, and a lot of the sound effects plugins that it comes with are not the best sounding that you can ever get, but it's free. And so if you don't like it, you can return it and get all your money back. I got started. I did my podcast for the first year with just Audacity. I didn't spend any money on software. And you can get a lot of stuff done with it. It's a very powerful program, and it's fairly simple to use. I probably should have put some screenshots in, but once if you download it and you start playing with it, it'll look very complicated for the first 5 minutes, and you'll actually record something in it, and you'll see the little waveforms. You can see you can like drag things over and cut and paste bits of sound with it, and once you start playing with it, it actually starts to become fairly intuitive. GarageBand from Apple. Is a similar program. Very different interface from Audacity, but it does the same stuff. And the advantage is any Macintosh that you can buy in the last 5 years, I think, GarageBand comes free with it. So, once again, if you happen to have a Mac, there's no reason not to try it and play around with it at least and decide if you like it. There are plenty of better sound programs, but I don't know of any other good free ones. And the advantage of starting with simple software like Audacity is that when you're first beginning, you're going to want to be spending a lot more time thinking about what you're saying, and you don't want to get yourself too hung up with the complexities of really, really advanced sound recording software. A lot of people make that mistake as well, of thinking that they have to have the top-end professional equipment, but then you spend more time trying to learn to use the hardware and less time focusing on your actual podcast and on what it is you have to say. So start simple, and then you can build up from there as you get experience. Yes?
Oh, wait just a minute. I just wanted to remind everybody that if you have questions or comments, please call me over so that we can record this.
Introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Elaine with bestofatlantaconcerts.com.
Hi.
And my question was on the, I don't, before you got too far for the microphones, what about microphones that you're not sitting at your computer when you're doing your recording? Like I'm out in the streets or something.
Thank you for reminding me. I didn't think about it. I was making this presentation, but there are some excellent portable recorders. I'm actually, if people are wondering what this stuff is that's clipped to my shirt, this is one of my favorite sound recorders of all time. This is an iRiver MP3 player, like the 700 series and the 800 series. iRiver doesn't make these anymore, which is a damn shame because they are the best sub $100 sound recorders. Product. Well, actually, no, because it's not. I'm not trying to make you jealous because you can still buy these things for $45 on eBay. I mean, they're still widely available. They're just not being produced direct. You can't go into Best Buy and buy them anymore. But these things are the best sub $100 sound recorders possibly ever made. They record direct to MP3 files, really high quality MP3 files. I mean, you can set the maximum settings on it. There you go. The microphone built in is only okay, but what's really nice about these is they have really good microphone inputs. They got little microphone preamps built in. So like this lapel mic that I have, I got this from a place called Giant Squid Audio Labs. It's like one guy in the Midwest that custom makes these microphones. I think he made them for bootlegging concerts, although he says on his website, don't bootleg concerts. But Yeah, but you can plug any microphone into this stuff, and it sounds really great. And short of spending $300 on a more advanced, I have more expensive sound stuff as well. Yeah, I've got these things, which is what Rusty's recording all of these sessions on. But if I'm just standing up here, the nice thing about this, I can clip my lapel mic in and I can just start talking. So even though I have more expensive ones, I use this thing all the time. So yeah, if you want to spend less than $100, I recommend the iRiver 700 and 800 series for a portable recording, and then just buy any lapel mic that fits your budget. So hopefully that answers that question. And again, if you want to spend more money, then there's plenty of any sound equipment, any need, you can spend exactly as much money as you want to. If you have $10,000, there are ways to spend $10,000. There is kind of a... Oh, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Mike Schenkel. I've got a variety of blogs, too much to talk about right now. What about interviewing people over the telephone? And one of the things, I've got a condo where I have a T1 line, yeah. So I have Vonage. And the quality of Vonage is not so good, and I'm and the people I want to interview would be people that I would be on the phone. Yeah.
That's a great question, and probably a much deeper question than you realize. The most common podcaster's answer to recording interviews over the phone is a program called Skype. If you're not familiar with it, it's a Skype, and just go there. And it's a voice chat program, and it's a very popular one. And yeah, it's all digital through your computer, but you can also use it to dial out to any phone in the world for like 2 cents a minute. And it's a fairly powerful program. It doesn't come with its own built-in recording capabilities, but a lot of companies make shareware that will record Skype, and there's ways to get it out through hardware. Actually, talking about how to record interviews is a bit beyond the scope of this, and it's still more of an art than a science, unfortunately. But at the end, the books I'm going to recommend actually have a lot more detail about that. The quality is actually better than phone if your end is on Skype, because it's a digital-to-digital connection. Yeah. It depends. There are ways to tweak your broadband settings and things to get better quality out of it. But, yeah, I mean, really, actually listen to a phone call sometime. The quality is really not... Yeah. The frequency range of a phone call is about a quarter of what people can actually hear. So you're never going to get fantastic sound, but Skype is pretty good. And it's a whole lot cheaper than spending $600 on like a hybrid system that'll patch into your phone. Yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say that if you... Oh, well, just a quick comment. This is Bayberry Shaw. I work for the Lucas Group. I was just going to tell him that if he wanted to look on Podcast 411, mm-hmm. I know that he does a lot of his interviews over Skype, and he has a tutorial on how to do that.
Yes. Yeah, the Podcast 411 site is great, and he's actually one of the co-authors of Tricks of the Podcasting Masters, which is the book that I was going to recommend as well. Yeah, he's probably the master of recording interviews by Skype, because he actually goes out from Skype through his mixer and all kinds of fun stuff. Anyway, there's kind of a controversy in podcast circles. Some people believe that the right way to do a show is just to turn on a microphone, start talking. When you're finished talking, you know, hit stop, save your file, and upload it. And a lot of these people actually do really great shows that way. The Pothole show that I do with Mike, we actually don't edit that. But both of us have been podcasting for a few years, so we actually have some comfort in front of the microphone, and we're fairly dynamic together. My shows, Escape Pod and Pseudopod, that stuff is pre-scripted when we do our intros. And I am not very comfortable if I'm just in a room all by myself turning on a microphone and talking. I'm actually very shy. I just fake it very well. So my feeling is... Unless you are a very charismatic person, unless you have a wonderful sense of presence and style and confidence in front of the microphone, it's probably better to do some editing on your own podcast. Cover the mistakes you make and be able to, you know, give yourself the leverage to move things around and to be able to, you know, stick music into it and those sorts of things after the fact. So the sound programs I mentioned, Audacity and GarageBand, will give you fairly advanced editing capabilities and the ability to take all the ums and ahs out of your voice, that sort of thing. I think there's some more sessions later on today about that. But I'm a big fan of making your podcast sound as good as you reasonably can make it before anyone hears it, because again, if your goal is to get an audience, your audience is going to have fairly high standards in terms of not having their time wasted. So you want to get, you know, you want to respect that, and you want to give them the most professional work you can do in reasonable time. You know, if it's going to take you 2 weeks to polish your, you know, polish your first podcast to absolute perfection, then you'll never actually get started with it. So don't spend so much time editing that you never actually upload anything. But, you know, at least put some work into it and put some editing into it. Once you've actually recorded some sound, which, you know, again, is easier than you think it is once you actually sit down and try it, then, yeah, you've got to put it into a compressed format so that people can reasonably download it and stick it onto their iPods and MP3 players and whatever else. There are a lot of audio formats out there. The only one that every device, well, every reasonable device in the world can play is MP3. MP3 is not the best sounding format. Most of the ones invented since sound a whole lot better. But if you do it in AAC, only iPods can play it. And you've cut out the other half of the world that is not going to be listening on iPod and iTunes. If you do it in Windows Media File, then all the people with iPods can't play it. So I recommend, if you want to have more advanced formats and more than one format, then, you know, knock yourself out. But at the very least, you need to be recording and encoding into MP3. There are a lot of software programs that can do that. A lot of them are nice little front ends built on the open source free LAME library. LAME stands for LAME ain't an MP3 encoder. It's actually an MP3 encoder. They just say that for legal reasons. But that's what I use. iTunes has one that doesn't sound quite as good, but it's a lot easier to use if you already have it. Windows Media Player can make MP3 files. Just do a Google search on MP3 encoder, and you'll find more options than, you know, than your brain can manage. But all of them will give you some control over the settings that you use. The two major ones that actually affect your file size. Well, the only thing that affects your file size is bitrate. Bitrate and how long the duration of your file. Most podcasters set a bitrate between 64 kilobits a second and 128. If these numbers don't mean anything to you, they'll start to make more sense as you do this stuff. 64 is pretty good for a voice-only podcast. It's not going to sound great. It's going to sound a little bit flat. It's going to sound a little bit grainy. But if it's just you talking into a microphone, then it's going to be fine. You know, people will be able to hear you very clearly. If you do less than that, if you do a lower quality than that, you'll get much smaller files, but your voice will start to suffer. Most music podcasts that I'm familiar with encode at 128 kilobits a second, which is very common. It's pretty close to CD quality at 128. I encode at 96 because I want my bumper music at the beginning and end of my podcast to sound good, and I think it's a good compromise. The sample rate, that basically determines what the frequency range is that can be in your sound file. 44.1 kilohertz. Again, when you look at the MP3 encoders, all of this will be in drop-downs. I recommend that one because it's the CD quality sample rate, and also if you set the wrong ones, then there are some online players that will make you sound like a chipmunk, and you don't really want to. You want to avoid all that. This is just a good overall setting. Set it at 44.1, and, you know, don't worry about it after that. Stereo. You get your choice of mono and stereo. Unfortunately, mono, even if you're just talking into one microphone, you know, your source might be mono, but a lot of MP3 players break if you just do a mono-only file. There are even some iPods that will crash if you give them a mono MP3 file. So I recommend a third setting called joint stereo, which sounds as good as mono if you have a mono source, but will also play on any MP3 player out there. There's a tagging system in every MP3 encoding program called ID3. And don't worry about what ID3 stands for, but what you want to do is make sure that in there you put the title of your episode, and you want to make sure that you put in the artist thing. You put your own name in there for who made it, and, you know, the year that you made it, and all the there's a lot of different fields that you can fill out, but the most important ones are your title and the author, because when someone's looking on their little screen on their iPod, they're going to want to know what this is, and so that title tag that you put in there is what displays. I'm sorry? What's the question?
The question is, what is forging?
Forging?
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, don't forget.
Don't forget, yeah.
Don't forget your info tax.
Yeah.
Yeah. The, the marching line of microphones there that I think at some point there's going to be a panel that needs five microphones. I'm not sure which one that is. So, you've got your MP3 file. Now your challenge is to put it someplace where people can actually listen to it. The two ways you want to distribute primarily are have it up on a website, because not everybody who wants to listen to your podcast even knows about feeds and knows about subscribing with iTunes and those sorts of things. A very large number of people are just going to want to go to a website and say, oh, okay, here's an episode of something I want to listen to, or they found it on a Google search or something. They want to be able to listen easily online. So you got to have a link to your MP3 file where they can just plain simple download it or play it in an online player on your site or whatever. If you want to make it a podcast, part of the definition of podcast is also that it's syndicated, that people can subscribe and get automatic updates to your content. So you have to do that as well on an RSS feed. There's a lot of software that'll let you do both at the same time, and that's really the easiest way to do it. Now, a lot of you are asking, what is this RSS thing that I just mentioned? The acronym stands for Really Simple Syndication, which many people consider a joke because it's actually not that simple, necessarily. But what it really is, it's a text file. XML, if any of you are familiar with that, it looks kind of like HTML if you open it up. It's all just text, and it's got these little tags that say this is a new item, and this is the date of that item, and here's a description of what this item contains. And you can also have an enclosure link, which is where your MP3 file actually goes. And they're ordered by date. So and what happens when people subscribe with a software program like iTunes or like NetNewsWire or Google Reader or a ton of blog readers will handle these things. When they subscribe to it, all they're doing is they're just getting that text file of yours once an hour or once a day or whatever. And they're reading that text file, and their software is saying, okay, is there anything new in this text file I didn't already know about? And if so, and if there's a link to an MP3 file, it's going to download it for you. That's all it really is. It's made to sound a lot more complicated than the actual reality of it, which is simply that it's a text file that software automatically finds out if there's anything new. And I do not recommend, like I said, you can open up these files on any podcast site that you go to. There's going to be a feed thing. You can look at it and you can see what these files look like. Some people code theirs by hand. I don't actually recommend that because it's too easy to make mistakes and it's really a pain in the butt. But luckily, there's plenty of software that will do it for you and it will make it. I'm only going to give two options for how to get podcasts up. There's hundreds, but I don't have time for that. The easy way, a company called Libsyn, stands for Liberated Syndication. There's probably more podcasts that host their media files with Libsyn than anywhere else. The reason, they're cheap and they're really good. Their plans start at $5 a month. So hopefully if you can fit that into your budget, that's coffee money. And for that, you get a fair amount of upload capacity every month. They give you a basic web page that will contain all your podcast files. It's not a fantastic looking web page. It's not going to be the best one that you'll ever get, but it is simple and it is very functional. And they'll also take care of your RSS feed for you. That'll give you all of those updates so people can subscribe to that. And they've also got a nice little statistics back end so you can find out how many people downloaded and listened. Podcasters go nuts about stats. And the really nice thing about it is you get a certain amount of upload space, but after 30 days, they take your files off and they put them into an archive server where they're still available to everybody, but it's not taking up the amount of disk space you're paying for anymore. So basically your disk space, $5 gets you like 100 megs, these 100 megabytes of upload, something like that. But that clears out every month. So every month you can upload 100 more megabytes and all the other stuff goes into their servers for free. It's a real nice service. It's very simple, and I recommend it if you don't want to think about the details. Yeah.
If you're going to post on your blog, do you need Libsyn? I mean, is it different than you were talking before?
Yeah, that's going to be my next option.
Okay.
So, do you need Libsyn? No, but again, if you want someone to do all the work for you, I think these guys are the best ones out there. The somewhat more complex version is to actually have your own blog with WordPress or Movable Type or any other blog platforms. Blogspot is one that many people use. And it's a fair amount more complex because then you actually have to pay attention to customizing the look and feel of your blog. And you have to get used to the blog software, etc. The advantage is you get a lot more control over the look and feel of the whole thing. Yeah, this is my own website. I built this stuff. I'm using WordPress, which is an open source blogging platform, and I'm using a plugin called PodPress, which lets me control where the MP3 files go, and it gives me stats, that sort of thing. The only disadvantage of using something like Blogspot or some of the free services, it makes things more complicated because Blogspot does not automatically give you an RSS format feed. They use a different format that a lot of podcatchers can't understand. And also, then you have to figure out where you're going to put your MP3 files. And there are free places for that too. But basically, there are ways to get all this done for free, but it gets more complicated. And so I'm not going to go into the free options at this point. Ask me later if you really want to know. You have to have a web host, obviously, if you're doing your own blog. I'm using a host called Dreamhost, which for like $8 a month, you can get 2 terabytes of bandwidth, which is enough for thousands and thousands of listeners. And ask me more about them later on if you want to know more. Dreamhost, yeah, they're not perfect. They don't have perfect uptime, but they're well within my budget.
We got a question over here, Steve.
Yes.
Okay. My name is Dave Owen, and I'm from Atlanta. My question is there, when you create a podcast MP3, mm-hmm. is there some way you identify it as a podcast as opposed to a music file so it will download into a designated playlist under the podcast heading?
The only difference is that RSS file. There's no difference in terms of the MP3 file. A music MP3 file and a podcast MP3 file will look exactly the same if all you're looking at is the file itself. A podcast is, like if you're using iTunes, if you subscribe to iTunes through the RSS feed, iTunes knows to put it into its special little podcast area on its software, but that's just because of where it got the file from, because it got it from your subscribed RSS feed.
RSS identifies to put it in a particular playlist.
Right. That's entirely up to the software of the person downloading it.
Are we talking categories? Is that...
No, he was just asking what's the difference between a music file and a podcast file. And on the file level, there is no difference. We're starting to run low on time. Promoting your podcast. Once you have it up and available on the web, people want to be able to find it somewhere, and you want to be able to let people know about it. These are the top 3 directories. There are so many podcast directories. Thank you, Amber. That there are directories of podcast directories out there. There are more than 100 podcast directories. These are the 3 important ones, in my humble opinion. iTunes, you really want to be listed there. And there's a fairly simple, submit your podcast link from the software itself. Podcast Alley and Podcast Pickle are fairly popular, podcasting sites. But most people are not going to find your podcast just by looking it up in a directory. Most people are going to find it because other people are talking about your podcast. Or they went someplace, they're engaged in forums about, cat waxing or whatever your subject is. And so you want to be posting in those forums. You want to be participating in communities about your subject and let people know who are already passionate about your subject. Talk to them directly. Don't just try and talk to people who already know about podcasts. Get more people into the community who want to listen to what it is you have to say. And also, working with other podcasters, networking, a lot of podcasters play promos of other people's podcasts. So it's good to make like a little minute-long sound clip about your podcast and get other podcasters to play it if they're working on the same kind of subjects that you are. But the biggest thing is market to the people who are interested in what it is you have to say and talk to them directly. It's exactly what Josh said earlier about having conversations with people. If you want to know more, these are the 2 books that I really, really like. Podcasting for Dummies. Yeah, I know what everybody says about the dummies titles, but this is a very good book, and it's a very good beginner's coverage. It tells you exactly what kind of sound equipment you need to get started, how to use it, how to get stuff promoted, all the stuff I just talked about in more detail, but not overly complex. If you want to learn more, the more advanced book, Tricks of the Podcasting Masters, has much more detail about recording interviews, about promotion, about getting revenue from your podcast, which I don't even want to touch here, et cetera. And there's also a very good mailing list, the Yahoo Podcasters list. Just go into Yahoo groups and just search on podcasters. It'll be the first one that comes up. I'm a very active smartass in that group. So, Laura's nodding her head back there. But it's a great place to ask questions and find a lot of people willing to answer those questions for you. Most important thing, have fun. If you're not having fun, if you're not excited about what you're talking about, it's almost impossible to get your audience excited. So make sure that what you're doing is worth the time, because believe me, you will be losing a lot of sleep getting it done. So just make sure it's worth it to you personally.
Well, let's give Steve a big clap. Is there any questions? Name?
Yeah, I'm Len Witt, and my blog is pjnet.org. I'm a professor up at Kennesaw. I had a question about, you said joint stereo, that you have to record in joint stereo. Like, my recorder says mono mic, you know. How do I get the joint stereo?
That's a feature of the MP3 encoder. It's not what you're actually recording in. You can record in mono and still tell the MP3 encoder when you make the MP3 file that you want it to be joint stereo and not mono. So.
Got a question over here.
We'll just keep doing this till they really kick me off the mic.
Christopher Williams. I don't have a blog or I'm not podcasting at this moment, but my question is with the USB mic. Mm-hmm. Normally when you're recording in some sort of audio software, you'll recognize a line in or mic mm-hmm. in. When you plug in the USB mic, does that show down? Where does that show down in your drop down?
It'll show up in Audacity or whatever you're using as a sound device. Okay. Yeah, and with the preferences and let you choose what you want to record from.
Okay.
Any modern sound program from like 1999 probably onwards will understand a USB microphone and it should show up just fine.
Okay.
If you want to have more than one USB
device,
other
questions?
It gets more complicated, but that's why you want a mixer.
Question over here.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to Unconcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of Unconcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.